Light the candle, tiger!
Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's Racing Post Golf Postcast. I'm Dave Clark from the Racing Post, and it's just me and thee this week. We've got Steve Palmer, the one and only, on the line. Steve, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Yeah, absolutely thrilled with what happened last week. I mean, greatest sporting comeback of all time, greatest sports story of all time, greatest everything of all time, in my opinion. I've just been very, very emotional since. I'll give you a good example. On Monday morning, I was watching a rerun of the closing stages of the Masters, trying to eat a slice of toast. Couldn't get it down me. I didn't ever realise that the expression lump in the throat actually meant anything, but literally couldn't get the toast down my throat because it was getting blocked by the lump in my throat. So, yeah, I'm in a very emotional state at the moment, Dave. I'm sure you are too. It's just a glorious moment for humankind, wasn't it? Seeing Tiger fight back from the brink of retirement through injury. He was close to giving up the game. 11-year major drought. Back to the scene of his first major win and off the mark. So, I'm buzzing at the moment, Dave.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, it's gripped the world. It's on the front of all the major newspapers come Monday. And if you'd been living under a rock, Steve, turned your phone on Monday, social media was awash with emojis of goats and tigers. I mean, the greatest of all time for you?
Oh, without question, the greatest of all time. I mean, and this story, you can't overplay this story. I mean, I've been gagging for something like this to happen. I mean, last summer was such a tease, wasn't it? England got to the semi-finals of the World Cup. Tiger was leading the Open Championship with 8 holes to go. If either of those things have happened, yeah, it would have. I could have died a happy man. But England blew it. Tiger blew it. But finally on Sunday, something truly wonderful happened. Tiger has won the Masters again. The whole planet united behind him. And Jack Nicklaus's record is in sight again. So, suddenly the world's a better place, Dave. On Monday mornings, I take my daughter to nursery on Monday mornings. I normally walk in there so flat and I just say, where do I put the coat? Hello, I'm really, really miserable. This Monday morning, I walked in and I was like, "Hi guys, did you watch the golf yesterday?"
And did you have a smash Play-Doh? Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
that's it. Did you have a smashing weekend? So I think everyone's feeling a lot better this week. And I've only just stopped crying, to be honest with you, Dave.
Well, Steve, let's talk about, before we get into the tournament itself, the journey in which Tiger Woods has actually been on. I mean, three different lots of back surgery. He had the chipping yips. I mean, for a lot of people, most people, this was never going to happen again, was it?
This was the this is why it was such a wonderful moment. I mean, Tiger's 43 years of age. I'm 41. I've grown up watching Tiger. He's been my hero my whole life. I remember backing him at 40 to 1. I backed him once for a tournament when he just started out as a pro. Didn't win that one, but he won one in Las Vegas in 1996, about a month after I backed him. And for me, like when people are talking about Jack Nicklaus is just a memory to me. Like I was 7 years old when he won. He's not even a memory to me. I was 7 years old when he won his last major. Nicklaus has just been a ceremonial golfer to my generation. And I want Tiger now to prove himself the undisputed greatest. For me, he is the best player. I mean, it's a bit like the world of darts. You've got Michael Van Gerwen is the best darts player. You know, he's taken scoring averages through the roof, but Phil Taylor's the greatest champion. No one will ever win as many world titles as Phil Taylor. But similar situation here. Nicklaus is the greatest champion, won the most majors, but Tiger is the better golfer. And hopefully now Tiger can catch him. I'm quietly confident. What Tiger's come through. I mean, you talk about the injuries. Four back surgeries is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, every part of his body has been knackered at some point. His knees, his Achilles. He's had so much to go through. His sex addiction. I've suffered with a sex addiction through the years. It's not to be underplayed. He's battled through a lot of problems. And as I say, not long ago, he could hardly move. He's sitting on his couch in his pants. He's watching cartoons. Apparently, he used to just sit at home watching cartoons, unable to move, chain eating cereal. And then a couple of years later, here we are. Yeah, he was arrested. He was addicted to painkillers. He was arrested for driving under the influence. And to come through all that in such a short space of time.
Only 2 years ago, to be that back, arrest. Yeah, that's right.
Only 2 years ago, the arrest. Yeah, he was a mess. The king was dead. The king is not dead anymore. Long live the king.
And you've mentioned it there, Steve. You think he can get to 18? This was his 15th major. Nicklaus sitting on 18. Can he get there?
Well, to address the future properly, you've got to address the past. And Tiger has essentially lost four seasons through injury. I mean, where would he be now? Where would he be now had he not been injured? Had he been fit throughout his career, how many majors would Tiger Woods have won? He'd already be level with Nicklaus. He might even be past Nicklaus. You know, that's how good he is. I think Tiger has to get the job done early or not at all. I mean, this season, he's got to get another one on the board for me. They're great opportunities. He's got Bethpage Black for the USPGA, Pebble Beach for the US Open, Royal Portrush for the Open. He's won the US Open at Bethpage. He's won the US Open at Pebble Beach by 15 shots. I think he'll fall in love with Portrush. So I think he needs to turn. He turns 44 in December. I think he needs to turn 44 as a 16-time major champion at least to have a chance of doing it, because the fields are so deep these days. To win majors against the fields as strong as they are now in your late 40s is a big ask. So yeah, I think he can do it, but he's got to get a few more on the board. I mean, the next four, you know, including the next Masters, big opportunities for him.
And of those four, which one do you see as the most likely?
The most likely, I like him for Royal Portrush, and I like him for the next Masters. I mean, how confident is he going to be at Augusta next year? I think they're the two best chances, but I give him a chance in all of them. I mean, he loves Pebble Beach. Bethpage probably the most difficult. I mean, these are exciting times to be alive, Dave, because Tiger Woods could conceivably win the next four and do it, you know, be on 19 majors come the next US Open.
Now, it felt a little bit different, Steve, because it brought it all forward. Earlier tea times, the threat of storms. And unfortunately, we're not speaking Japanese. Matsuyama, it wasn't to be. But I noticed that you put Tiger Woods up 7-2, 4-1 after 54 holes. So did you have him on side at some stage? The Racing Post Golf-wise extra tipping that you did there. Surely you had Woods on side at some stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in running, it quickly became obvious that Tiger was a massive threat. I mean, in round one, he left so many shots out there. Loads of makeable putts missed in round one, but still open with a 70. And 70's been the magic number for Tiger in many a Masters. He's won three previous Masters when opening with a 70. So that was an ominous start. He was swinging great. And the big thing for me early on was how composed and confident he looked. I mean, I was expecting some nerves. You know, I was expecting a few nerves from Tiger, but there were none. There was a real swagger from day one. He just got better and better throughout the tournament. And I didn't want to give up on my original selections too early. But by Sunday, it was clear as day that there was only one winner. And I'm supposed to be betting responsibly at the moment. These are responsible gambling days. But let's just say I bet very, very responsibly on Sunday morning. And my family will eat well. They will eat well this month.
There was a great line from you, Steve, in that piece. Nobody has more knowledge and nous when it comes to getting the job done down the stretch at Augusta. Talk us through, well, sort of the back nine. I know he sort of got within one on seven, match Molinari's birdie at eight, but it all just unfolded on that back nine, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to talk about how Tiger won this tournament, yep. the stats are absolutely remarkable. I mean, we talked about it on the podcast last week about the key stat being strokes gained on approach. Accurate iron play into those small targets is essential. You've got to land on the right sections of those greens. And Tiger's stats last week, he was 44th for driving distance, all right? 44th for driving distance. So he's being left behind on the off the tee. He's 47th for driving accuracy. So he's not finding that many fairways. He's 48th for putting. How do you win the Masters? How do you win the Masters with stats like that? He was first for greens in regulation. His iron play, as it always has been, absolutely majestic. And combined with that, his course management. His course management was second to none. Used all of his Augusta experience on Sunday. As you say, the 12th hole decisive. You've got the younger, naive souls throwing themselves in the drink on the 12th hole. Tiger Woods aims for the fat of the green, makes his two-putt par. He knows that those first 12 holes at Augusta is about survival. Survive those first 12 holes, stay patient, stay calm, and then from the 13th tee to the 16th green, that's when you can attack, that's when you step up a gear. And it was just a classic clinical Sunday performance from Tiger, the most deadly finisher of them all.
Yeah, I mean, at that 12th, that's when he went odds on in running, and Molinari went in the drink, and he just, the old Tiger Woods was there, Steve, to see, you know, all of a sudden he was in the zone, you know, there was no flailing at any point, and it looked ominous for the field thereafter.
Yeah. There was a calmness about Tiger throughout the week, but particularly on Sunday. I mean, he was chewing his gum. I mean, the old Tiger used to have to get really pumped up, and the old Tiger used to overpower golf courses. You know, this Masters win completely different to it, very different to his previous ones. Used to be the big hitter who turned up at Augusta and overpowered it. They talked about Tiger proofing the course. This Tiger was all about calming himself down, slowing himself down like a surgeon, taking apart the course like a surgeon. And that gum chewing thing, I think that helped. I think it helped.
Relaxation was the line on that. I think Mickelson was having a go as well himself.
Yeah, I think it'll be all the rage now. I think we'll all be out there next time we have a game with our chewing our gum, because as you say, it's a calm, composed, confident performance from Tiger. And I'm so excited about the next four majors today.
Right, I want to talk to you about some of the other players in the field. Quick honourable mention, Chappers last week put up Hovland, top amateur, that copped. What do we make of him?
Hovland, yeah, fantastic. I think he was annoying Tiger a little bit in the Butler cabbie and just wouldn't stop talking to Tiger. Tiger wanted to say, all right, mate, yeah, you've had your fun. Let's focus on me. But Hovland, massively powerful, brilliant Augusta debut. I wish he would turn pro immediately. I think he's got plans to delay turning
back to
pro.
Back to score, it was the next day. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Back to score. I mean, I think he should be a little bit more ambitious. I think he's ready. But I'm excited about Hovland. I think he'll go far.
Okay. Wilco also put up hole in one at 16. There was two of them, JT and DeChambeau. Right. Let's rattle through some of the others then, Steve. Dustin Johnson finished well, tied second. What do we make of him last week?
Yeah. I mean, just cruised into second place, but looked incredibly happy in defeat. You see his interview afterwards. He doesn't seem to care, does he? He really doesn't care what happens. Even in finishing second in the Masters, most people would be crestfallen. He left a couple of shots out there. He got off to a very slow start on Sunday, but yeah, he just doesn't care. Which as a punter, you don't really want to be backing players that don't care. But yeah, he can win tournaments without caring. But Dustin Johnson is the world number one for a reason. All quality.
Right, now a player I'm not really sure what to do with, who finished fifth, 5 under on his final round, Jason Day. What do we do with him? I mean, I'm sure I saw him receiving more medical treatment at some stage, but he's there. He's finished tied fifth and he's finished well.
Yeah, you just be very careful with Jason Day. I mean, you don't want to be backing him at short prices. You don't want to be heavy staking on Jason Day for a long time, because he's clearly got injury problems. The rumours coming out of Australia are that he's going to have back surgery after the majors. So, he's not fully fit. And, I'm not interested in Jason Day for a long, long time. I need back surgery from him. And then I might consider him after that. But, yeah, he's not right. Don't worry about him.
OK, steer clear of him. What about McIlroy? I mean, he was the short price anti-post favourite and never really looked a contender.
No. Such a shame for McIlroy. I mean, he's been playing great all year. Every time he's teed up, he's been good. And then he gets to the one he wants to win above all others, and the game's not there. He couldn't get going. I mean, he's just always going to be under so much pressure in this event, trying to complete the Currie Grand Slam. You saw the best of McIlroy on Sunday when he'd given up. Yeah. Given up the ghost. You know, free flowing 68. So it's easier said than done. It's virtually impossible. But he's got to try and treat the Masters like any other event. And maybe playing so well this year added an extra layer of expectancy and pressure on him. It was just such a good chance this year. Maybe the time that he'll win the Masters is when he comes in, four missed cuts or something, and he's off the radar a bit more. That's how crazy the game of golf can be. There's a chapter in my book, actually, Dave. It sounds like I'm upselling here, but Born to Punt 2010, available from all bad bookshops and available online for about 10p now, I think. There's a chapter in there about McIlroy where I predicted his major career before he'd win anything, and predicted a load of US Opens, a load of Opens, a couple of USPJs. But I said that the Masters would be elusive until his mid-40s, and it looks like Born to Punt is proving the oracle on that. McIlroy's read that. He had a little chuckle at that, and I think it's in his head. I think Born to Punt's in his head. So, yeah.
It's the final piece of the career Grand Slam, or is there just something that is against him? He's putting. I mean, he's massive off the tee.
back then in 2010, it was because putting was his weakness, and I always thought that the Augusta greens would be too much for him. But as the years have gone by, he's shown he's good enough to win there. But yeah, I think it's definitely a mental thing now for McIlroy. Maybe he has to wait until he's 43, like Tiger. I mean, Tiger won at 43 last week. Maybe McIlroy's going to have to wait until then. But he needs some. Yeah, there's plenty of sports psychologists out there. I mean, the fellow that sorted out Molinari. I mean, there must be someone out there that can get McIlroy in the right frame of mind to win the Masters. He'd give him 100 million quid if there's someone that can unlock the brain and make him play like he has all season in the Masters.
What did you make of the greens, Steve? Because they didn't look lightning fast to me on the eye.
No. A lot of moisture, a lot of storms throughout the week. And the greens weren't in perfect condition this year, dare I say. Augusta didn't have its normal sort of, immaculate look. But there was regular storms overnight. And a little bit of a different test.
Right, two more players before we head off to a break and then tackle this week's event. Two players that struggled. Justin Rose, who missed the cut, and Jordan Spieth. What did you make of them two?
Justin Rose, I don't know. I said before the event that having his caddy come back, because his caddy was off for several months, had a few heart problems, and then this was his first event back. I don't know whether that unsettled him a bit, because he'd been doing very well with Lordy. He had Lordy on the bag, formerly Stenson's caddy. I don't know whether that switch affected him. But Rosie, very disappointed. Who was the other one you said?
Jordan Spieth,
well.
We wasn't expecting much from him anyway, to be fair, was we?
No. I mean, it's his favourite golf course, and he made the cut. I had very low opinion on how Spieth would play, and he did actually do a little better than I expected. And he's having another bash this week, isn't he? He could go reasonably well this week, but I still think Spieth's got serious issues with a lot of departments of his game. So it's a long time before I'll be back in Jordan Spieth again.
Okay, that about wraps it up, Steve. Anything to add from last week before we head into this week?
No, nothing to add other than it was the greatest sporting moment of my life, I'd say.
Okay, and, that's fair enough. Look,
may never be bettered, I suppose, until he gets the 19th major. If I'm still alive to see the 19th major win, that'll probably better it.
I'm sure some of the firms out there will price that up at some stage, so we'll look out for that. What sort of price would you make that, Steve, him to do that, to beat Nicholas's 18?
They're all over the show with the prices. There's prices as short as 5-1, and I've seen 14-1 out there as well. So, wow. I'm Tiger's biggest fan, and I'm pessimistic. I think he's got to get it done quickly. There's not a lot of point taking those prices, because you don't want to have him on your side for majors when he's in his late 40s, early 50s or whatever. So you might as well just back him individually for each major that's coming up, because he's got to get it done quickly or not at all.
Well, that about wraps it up for last week's Tiger Woods show at Augusta. Let's tackle this week's event, Steve. The RBC Heritage at Harbour Town Golf Links. And the key word this week, I think, is precision. Is that right?
Yeah. It's a totally different test to what the players faced last week. It's a classic peak die design, created in 1969, revised in the year 2000. So course form punters focus on 2000 onwards. Tricky seaside track, 7,099 yards, only three par fives. Straight hitting to tight targets and good scrambling. These are the smallest greens on the circuit. So, you need good scramblers on your side this week as well.
Well, 49 bunkers and 12 water hazards. You're not joking.
No. Harbour Town is absolute classic cool. So the players love it. The views are spectacular, and it's a nice low key atmosphere after the tension and stress of Augusta.
Before we get into selection, Steve, how do players fare that have gone deep in Augusta moving into this? Because surely it's got to be sort of emotionally draining to be in the running to win the Masters and then turning up at this very cute tight track.
Yeah, traditionally, if you're in the thick of things at Augusta and have expended a lot of mental energy there, then you struggle the following week to get yourself in the right frame of mind for Harbour Town. There have been a few exceptions to the rule. I think Matt Kuchar was one who contended at Augusta, then won at Heritage the following week. But this is one of the weeks of the year when you've got to really assess the mental state of players more so than ever, really.
Right then, let's not mess about. Who are we having on side this week, Steve?
Well, my number one selection is Patrick Cantlay, who was in the thick of things on Sunday, but I don't think it would have taken a lot out of him. I mean, he made a brilliant eagle at the 15th hole on Sunday to take the lead, and then really flirted with the green jacket. But from there, he got a little bit defensive on his tee shot at 16. Understandable. His first time in the mix in the Masters. Defensive tee shot, hung up on the bank. Made a bogey at 16. Bogey at 17. Parred the 18th. But yeah, there's plenty of positives for Cantlay to take. He booked his place in next year's Masters. The top 10 from the Masters automatically qualify for the following year. So that's a fillip for him. It was his best ever major performance. And I don't think he'd be too drained to challenge at Heritage. I mean, he opened with a pair of 73s at Augusta. He was tailed off very quickly, relaxed off the radar, and then shot up at the weekend. And he finished three shots shy of Tiger. I mean, more experienced players, like you talk about last week's bets, Bubba Watson made a late charge and then struggled over those closing few holes. They're not easy. 16, 17, 18, more experienced players than Cantlay drop shots there. So I don't think he'd be beating himself up about that. Technically, this course sets up perfectly for Cantlay. He loves Pete Dye designs. I've seen loads of interviews where he's waxing lyrical about Pete Dye designs. He's finished third and seventh in his two Heritage starts. He's playing consistently well this term. So, every department of Cantlay's game is in good order. He's got a positive strokes gain statistic in all the six main statistical categories on the US Tour. Cantlay number one.
Yep.
And next best is Kevin Kisner. I was surprised how juicy the prices were about Kevin Kisner. He's playing in his home state this week, South Carolina man. He won the WGC match play at the end of last month. And I think that's given him a real focus at the moment. That's given him a little sniff of the FedEx Cup. He's 15th in the FedEx Cup standings. And this is a typically carefree character. He's not a big practicer. He enjoys himself away from the course. But I think the fact that he's got that little carrot now of a potential $10 million FedEx Cup check, I think we're going to see a much more switched on Kisner for a little while. Short, tight, fiddly courses like Harbour Town are perfect for Kisner. He almost won this title in 2015 when he was a US Tour maiden. Lost a playoff in 2015. He's finished 11th and 7th the last 2 years. His two stroke play victories on the US Tour have come on similar tracks, which where accuracy is essential, Sea Island, Colonial Country Club. So, yeah, this is right up the street of Kevin Kisner, and I think he should be much higher at the betting than he is.
Right, I'm going to chuck in two this week, Steve, that I'm having a few quid on. Give us your thoughts on them. First one, Ian Poulter, 33-1. 16th in the driving accuracy stats, 10th in greens in regulation so far this year, and going about his business quite well this year. He's been in the frame, pulled to four top 10s, three top 25s in just eight starts so far this year. What are your thoughts on him?
Very much so. Yeah, this is the sort of track that Poulter can contend on. I think he'll enjoy himself there if he's not too humbled by what happened on Sunday, because all the players were lining up to congratulate Woods on Sunday as he was coming into the clubhouse. And why Poulter went there, I don't know. Tiger doesn't like Ian Poulter. He had all his sort of genuine friends there, and then he got to Poulter and he's like, oh my god, and just sort of token handshake, turned his back to him. So Poulter might be humbled by that, he's never humbled by anything, is he, old Ian Poulter? He's a cocky old sausage. And I give him a chance this week, Dave. Yeah, I think that's a fair selection.
And the other one, Siwoo Kim, who sort of fell apart coming home last year, runner-up, having sort of had the tournament at his mercy, didn't he?
Yeah, he broke my heart. I mean, last year went really well, but I had Siwoo Kim at 110-1, I think it was, for this last year. And I was counting the money, and then his putter turned into a live rattlesnake down the last few holes, didn't it? He missed so many short putts. He's got to bury the memory of that, and he's also got to bury the memory of the Texas Open a couple of weeks ago, where he was leading that, and he had a final round capitulation there, and a few injury problems, I'm afraid, Dave. He had a few, he had a tight chest there, he had a few injury issues, but played all right last week. So
21st, at the Masters last week.
Yeah, 21st. That's a great performance on a course that doesn't particularly suit him. So maybe he's over the injuries. So I give him a chance too, Dave. Good luck with that one.
And your other four, you've mentioned Cantlay and Kisner. Who else do we like?
Yeah, there's eight each-way places this week. So, fifth the odds, eight places with a lot of firms. So, let's try and fill six of them. Cantlay and Kisner. But Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson DeChambeau, he shared the first round lead at Augusta, then dropped away. But he got a hole in one on the 16th hole on Sunday. And yeah, that was the first hole in one of his career. He's never had a hole in one anywhere, ever. So he's he was absolutely, I thought his reaction to that hole in one was a bit over the top, but I didn't realize it was his first hole in one ever. I think he left the Masters absolutely buzzing. Yeah, and he was fourth on his Heritage debut in 2016, and he was third last year. He adores the Harbortown links. He's a prolific champion. Be going for his sixth US Tour title this week. So yeah, Bryson DeChambeau, I ummed and ahed on whether 20-1, 18-1 was too short. But I think you've got to respect him this week. Then Byung Hun An is the other one I like. Twice a US Tour playoff loser. Too good to remain a US Tour maiden for much longer. Made a very solid start at 2019. Seventh in the Texas Open last time out. Seventh in the Heritage last year, where he outscored everyone bar the eventual champion over the final 3 days. Matthew Fitzpatrick adores the Harbortown links. Is his favourite stateside track. Closed with a 67 last year to finish 14th. Runner-up at Bay Hill last month. Thriving in a new partnership with the caddy Billy Foster, one of the best caddies out there. Fitzpatrick made a terrible start at Augusta last week. Open with a 78. That looks like a miscut. Not on your Nelly. Played the final three rounds in 11 under par. Matched Tiger Woods for the final three rounds scoring. So Fitzpatrick should go very well on the course he loves. And then, the final one is Aaron Baddeley, the 2006 Heritage Champion. That was his maiden US Tour title. He was second there in 2008. And Baddeley's shown flashes of his best this term. When he's good, he's really good. And he's a big old price this week, Baddeley. So yeah, that's my six.
Well, we'll wrap through the betting. DJ tops it at around about 8-1. Molinari 14s. Those two, a little bit on the skinny side, you feel?
Yeah. I don't think Dustin would be playing this week unless he was sponsored by RCB. This is
he's
the
obliged
RCB,
to, isn't he? Yeah.
He's obliged to play. He only signed up with them the February before last. So last year, it suddenly added to his schedule for obvious reasons. He'd just become a RBC man. And I don't see him doing much practice this week. I don't see him being very focused. And he could still win in classic Johnson, not give a monkey style. But I prefer players that are hungry for success.
Okay, and then we'll move down a few more. Kuchar, you've mentioned Tommy Fleetwood.
Tommy Fleetwood, yeah, debutant, but the course should suit. Desperate for his first US Tour victory, so I would give Fleetwood a chance, but I just preferred players that had played there before.
And final one, I want to get a line from you on is Webb Simpson.
Webb Simpson, yeah, every chance Webb Simpson, because that was a surprisingly good Master performance. He never, ever contends at Augusta. Finished fifth last week. I think, it's a real bonus for him. And never really in the thick of things down the stretch there. Should have plenty left in the tank. This is a classic Simpson test. Yeah, I do feel fear Webb Simpson this week.
And one more player, Steve. A long shot, but I mean, the Heritage could be called the Luke Donald frame-up tournament as well. He's 80-1. I think he's finished second five times. A couple of thirds as well. Could he run a race at 80-1?
Yeah, he showed a bit the other day, didn't he? A few weeks ago, I can't remember what tournament it was, but he contended for a little way. And I suppose you could say, of all the players competing this week, he might take a lot of inspiration from what Tiger's done, because similar sort of age, and Donald's had a lot of injury problems. You know, he'd be hoping his career follows a similar path. You know, former world number one, got some injury problems, fell away. And now, you know, clawing his way back. So, yeah, maybe it takes some inspiration for what Tiger's done. But, I suppose that's a generous price.
80-1 him. Now, before we go and we round up the selections, Steve, this week we're looking at a mega tight track. Precision is the key. When you're confronted with courses like that, which stats are you most interested in? I mean, there's a great stats database on the PGA Tour website. Is that one you use?
Yeah. Very thin fairways at Harbortown, so driving accuracy is important. But perhaps the most important stat of all is scrambling, because, as I say, these greens are the smallest on the circuit, and you're going to miss greens, and you're going to need to get up and down. So, I'd focus on the scrambling stats this week.
Okay, right, fair enough. Right, then, before we go, Steve, final word from yourself. Cantlay is the headline tip. Why should we have him on side?
Yep, Patrick Cantlay. He's going places. He's got the same management company as Tiger Woods. There's a mutual respect between the pair of them because Tiger knows that this lad, if he hadn't have had his injury problems, he's had some injury problems very early in his career. Cantlay has the potential to be one of the absolute elite. You know, I think he is a major champion in waiting. And yeah, I think he's only won one US Tour title at the moment, but I think it won't be long before he starts winning plenty of US Tour titles and then and gets onto the major league. So yeah, we're talking about a world class player here who's young enough. He's only 27. He just turned 27. He's young enough to make serious waves in the game of golf.
Brilliant, excellent. So he's the one. Around about a 22-1 shot. Thank you for your time, Steve. I'm sure you'll recover from Woods's emphatic Augusta win within months. It won't be an overnight job, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah, no, it just perfect time, and I needed a little boost, and Tiger's provided it. You know, I think the whole world's a buzz at the moment, aren't they? Yeah, you can imagine all over the globe, everyone in their living rooms watching that unfold, and everyone's got a little bit of a boost now. It's good for the world.
Good stuff. Palmer's got a spring in his step. He's the man to follow in the Racing Post. Thank you for listening and watching. Everyone out there, do look out for racing football. We've even got a snooker podcast coming up as well in the coming days. World Championships round the corner. Tune in next week for next week's Racing Post Golf Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Give them the hole.